You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second of three podcasts on chronic spontaneous urticaria hosted by Med Learning Group, titled Chronic Spontaneous Urticaria, the importance of prompt diagnosis and evidence-based management with targeted biologic therapies, approved and investigational treatments. This series will be designed to meet the educational needs of U.S.-based dermatologists who diagnose, treat, and/or manage patients with chronic spontaneous urticaria. My name is Stephanie, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about treatment guidelines and discussing FDA-approved drugs, as well as investigational drugs that are still undergoing clinical trial testing. Joining us today is Dr. Gil Yosipovich. Dr. Yosipovich is the Professor and Stiefel Chair of Medical Dermatology, the Director of Miami Itch Center, Dr. Philip Frost Department of Dermatology and Cutaneous Surgery at the Miller School of Medicine, University of Miami, in Miami, Florida. Dr. Yosipovich, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's begin today by talking about treatment guidelines for CSU. Can you tell us about those, and have there been any recent changes to these guidelines?
It's an excellent point here. There have been some changes in guidelines based on the international guidelines that were published in 2022. The U.S. Guidelines were published in 2014. So in regard to the 2022 suggestions of the panel is that we're increasing the doses of second-generation antihistamine up to four times. This was not mentioned in the American guidelines in 2014, and there were a lot of drugs that have been recommended at the time that we really don't think are helpful. And I'd like to mention them, such as H2 antagonists. I don't give them for a long time. Leukotriene inhibitors, all of them are really worthless in my opinion, and therefore they do not need to be added to the regimen. And if after adding the high dose non-sedating antihistamine, the patient does not respond, we should go immediately to omalizumab, which is a biologic targeting IgE. And if needed, we can increase the dose or shorten the intervals. In my experience, by the way, every 2 weeks of administration is a lot more effective in the majority of the patients than every 4 weeks. However, not everyone responds to these treatments. And in the new guidelines, if omalizumab is not helpful, then you have to try, in addition to the antihistamine that you continue giving, a non-specific immunosuppressant of the recommended one is cyclosporin. And I usually give in doses, although the guidelines don't mention that in terms of dosages, but I give high doses if patients have no kidney problems or any issues of hypertension is 4 milligrams per kg.
So you mentioned a number of drug categories. Can you tell us a little about each of these, maybe introduce some of them through the use of a case study?
Wonderful. So let's go over a case study of one of my patients by the name of Pat Jackson. She's a 35-year-old patient with itchy whelps on her face, trunk, swelling of her lips and eyes. So she has angioedema. It waxes and wanes, symptoms ongoing for the past 4 months. Initially, she attributed these symptoms to some bug caught during travels in South America. She also suffers from hypertension, is on amlodipin, a calcium inhibitor, for the past 5 years. Clearly, it has a significant impact on her quality of life. She has severe bouts of burning and itching, few instances of significant swelling of her eyes, lips, and breathing problems. And she has been in the ER four times due to face and eye swelling. It's not surprising that she has also disturbed sleep, and she only sleeps about 4 hours a day. Extremely anxious and concerned that these attacks will be fatal. So in presentation, in physical exam, she had 50 wheels on her trunks, arms, face in a period of 24 hours. So she, in terms of the diagnostic guidelines, has moderate to severe urticaria, has a positive dermatographic response with whelps and itch. We took labs, her CBC with differential, liver function test, thyroid panel, ANA, all normal. Just to assure her, because I didn't think that she has a parasitic disease, but stool for parasites were negative. And we are actually, she's a traveler, and I took Helicobacter pylori serology, because there have been reports of association of infection, in particular Helicobacter pylori, with CSU. And in terms of her treatments, she was before on oral sedating and non-sedating antihistamine. She received H1 and H2 blockers and steroid injection and short courses of oral steroids. As I mentioned before, I don't believe that H2 blockers really add anything to the regimen. So the question I would ask all of you is, what would you give her? In terms of this case, she has quite a significant CSU, and I do not think that it's enough just to give her second generation antihistamines such as cetirizine. And I immediately recommended her to start omalizumab. And indeed, As I mentioned before, omalizumab is an anti-IgE antibody. It's been the first biologic for CSU. And indeed, following four injections of 300 milligrams, I give a high dose, her CSU symptoms and angioedema were resolved. So to me, clearly, this is an indication in this case. I wouldn't waste my energy in terms of giving more antihistamines, non-sedating. And I highly recommend, I know that many of my colleagues, dermatologists, give oral steroids and injections, but these drugs are not effective enough and you can't give it for a long period of time. So omalizumab is, in this case, my first choice.
Dr. Yosipovich, can you talk to us about when you would make the decision to lower this patient's dose of omalizumab? And for that matter, under what circumstances might you increase it?
It's an excellent question. So let's first say when we decide to lower it. So if a patient has for a couple of months no attack at all, no flares of her or any evidence that the disease is active, I stop the medication, see what's going on and what happens. However, if the patient doesn't respond to the medication, and a lot of times the insurance mandates us to do it once monthly, I'm trying always to do it every 2 weeks and see if we can get control of this condition. In conclusion, what we do in terms of if there's no adequate control, I try to increase the frequency or the dosage of omalizumab. If there is a full remission under the treatment, I do not continue for long periods because remember, this is a disease, it could be self-limited. We know that CSU could one time stop. So if we see that there is a full response with omalizumab, it's fine for a couple of months, it's fine to stop this medication.
Can you touch upon agents that can be used in patients that are refractory to these therapies?
So there are many agents that I've tried throughout the years. Let's start with anti-inflammatory agents. The ones that I've been using many times were hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil, 200 milligrams, Dapsone and sulfasalazine and colchicine, also work on some neutrophilic aspect of in chronic urticaria. And methotrexate is something also that I've used in several cases. This is not high-dose methotrexate that is given in patients with cancer. It's very similar to the doses that you use like in patients with even less than in psoriasis, around 12.5 milligrams per week, once weekly. In terms of immunosuppressants, my favorite is cyclosporine, and I mentioned that high doses of cyclosporine are my favorite, between 4 to 5 milligrams per kg. Tacrolimus also is an option, and I've used also because cyclosporine has a lot of renal toxicity and issues of hypertension. I sometimes combine cyclosporine with mycophenolate mofetil, because mycophenolate mofetil, it works a bit slower, so you use both of them and taper down the cyclosporine after a month or month and a half, where the mycophenolate mofetil kind of kicks into the system. In terms of really refractory conditions beyond what we mentioned, and I mentioned omalizumab is my favorite for the majority of these cases, is IVIG. Good old IVIG, actually, it's an expensive treatment, but did quite wonders in the era before omalizumab in patients who failed other treatments. So it is not easy to administer. There are some side effects, but it has a significant effect in patients who are with refractory CSU.
Thanks for that. And what about new therapies that are currently being investigated? When might you use these in one of your patients?
Oh, this is the most exciting part of my talk today, because there's so many of them, and it's very exciting to be a dermatologist, allergist, or any doctor who can treat with these drugs, because they're changing the landscape. So I'll start with one drug that all of us are very familiar with in the last 8 years is dupilumab. And it has been shown in a phase 3 Liberty Cupid study to be very effective for reducing itch and hives in patients with CSU. Why is that? Because type 2 cytokines have a role in the immune autoimmunity of CSU. Another very exciting, unfortunately, these drugs are not yet approved by the FDA, so this is off-label use. Another drug that seems to be very exciting is remibrutinib. This is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. Again, a very impressive drug in reducing itch and the whelps in patients with CSU. Again, works on B cells and has a very promising results in phase 3 trial. And then there are a lot of other new drugs. I have to mention that some of them we still have to receive data, because not all of them have been yet published. I am in particularly very much impressed with anti-KIT inhibitors. These are receptors on mast cells that are very interesting in terms of mast cell activation. And there is a drug called barzolvolimab that has shown very promising results in chronic induced urticaria, and I think also in CSU it won't be surprising that it would work extremely well. There's another class of drugs we don't know yet the results, but I'm very excited due to my research is related to MRGPRX2. MRGPRX2 is a G-coupled protein cell receptor that is cardinal in mast cell activation, and inhibition of that pathway kind of blocks the activity of mast cell, will reduce the itch significantly, and also I suspect has a promising role for human patients, but there's still a long way to go and seeing how it's translated into a successful drug. But this is, again, emphasizing how this field is growing, and it's very exciting to all of us. There are other drugs, I would say, that could be interesting. Interleukin-5, we know, has a significant role in chronic urticaria. There are also other drugs like anti-Siglec that have been tested. But I believe that the ones that I mentioned, and particularly the dupilumab and the tyrosine kinase, the Bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor, and particularly the one that is most advanced, there are several in development, but the most advanced now is remibrutinib.
This has certainly been a very informative podcast. That is all the time we have for today, so I'd like to thank Dr. Yosipovich for taking the time to speak with us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining. Hopefully, you're able to tune in to the other podcasts in this series. There are a total of 3, as well as some of the many other types of CME programs that MedLearning Group offers. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. I'd like to give a special thank you to Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Thank you and have a great day.